Okay, how are you, everybody? Can't really hear. Oh, I like the head shakes. One day we'll do it in person. In any case, transitions are really part of the human experience. We transition from mother mode to work mode, and we transition from child-centered talk to adult-centered talk very, very quickly. Our brains are really wired to withstand and adjust, sometimes in mere seconds, to new surroundings, new people, new circumstances. For some, transitions are difficult. Switching gears sometimes can be very, very challenging. Yet, as we know, switching modes and switching gears and making those transitions are really part and parcel of what creates a healthy existence. The question is, what do we do once we make this transition? What do we take with us? We are currently in a transition mode because we have just left 40 days of very intense connection and growth in Chodesh Elul and in Chodesh Tishrei. All that, think about all the multisensory experiences that we've had. The Yom Ha'Nirayim, Sukkos, we've been here, we heard the shofar, we tasted the honey, we sort of, got a whiff of that esrog, we saw the beautiful sukkah, we were enveloped in it, we heard the tunes and the words of the Yom Ha'Nirayim davening and the singing and the dancing of Simchas Torah. And now we leave it all and we find ourselves in a month that's devoid of all of that experience. It seems anticlimactic. For some, let's be honest, some of us perhaps were relieved to return back to routine. Yes, no. I know that when I went back to work, we all asked each other, we all looked like a truck hit us, literally. It was like the first day after Yontif. We didn't have off Isru Chag. And how are you? Oh, I'm okay. Baruch Hashem, I had such a great Yontif, but I'm so relieved to be back to routine. And that's okay. Of course, we're all human. And Baruch Hashem, I hope it's because of good things that we were busy taking care of our families and cooking and eating, nonstop. But if that's the case, we really owe it to ourselves not to simply transition into the old routine, but to move into our old routine with something different, something like a new perspective. So how do we hold on to the beautiful inspiration of the previous months of Elul and Tishrei? Because we are still humming those tunes and thinking about Yontif. In fact, the name Cheshvan, we find ourselves in Cheshvan, the name is Mar Cheshvan, we'll talk about that in a minute. But according to Hasidish thought, the Sif, the Sfas Emes, the Imre Emes, I've seen this in a number of Sfarim, I've seen this in the Sefer Toda'a. Mar Cheshvan can be associated, if you switch around the vowels, to the Aramaic word of Merachashin Sifase, which means that our lips are still moving. They're still whispering, and they're still moving with the songs and the words of the Yom Ha'Nirayim, the Tefillos of Sukkos, the songs of Simchas Torah, all of that connection, all the mitzvos that we did, our lips are still moving. It's as if, think about a concert that you've gone to and you've left the concert, you're still singing those songs, or you spend time with family, you had this high spending time with family at a simcha, and you're still thinking about it, you're still whispering about it, you're murmuring about it. That's what this school of thought is teaching us, that Merachashin Sifse, that our lips are still moving with what we have gained from Chodesh Tishrei. The Yerach Ha'etanim, as the Navi calls it, this strong month, it's called a strong month. Eitan is strong because of all of the mitzvos that we had in it in Tishrei, is so strong that Cheshvan still has the koach of Tishrei because we're still whispering, we're still repeating, we're still reviewing things in our minds. Tishrei was a training ground. Tishrei had the goalposts. We had the coaches. We had landmarks to tell us what we should do to connect to HaKadosh Baruch Hu in a deeper way. We had all of those extra things. Think about all the things, extra things we said in davening. And now we are on our own. And we're going to turn to the source sheets in a moment. As Rav Pinkas, if Rav Shimshon Pinkas explains, he says, we have a huge check that HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave to us. It's in our hands. What are we going to do with that check? Are we going to cash in on that check once we reach Cheshvan? And he says, and I want to share with you, if you look at source, if you want to go to source number one, for those that have it or that want to look at it, I just wanted to share with you the words of Rav Pinkas because it's so beautiful. In source number one, he says, Yamim elu heim rega'im nehadarim b'chayim achaleinu ladas shekol zeh mistayim en tzikiyah shofar shel ne'ilah. He's talking about the Yom Ha'Nirayim, and he says, these days were magnificent. And it seems that it all comes to an end at Ne'ilah. He's speaking specifically about Yom Kippur at this point. Oh, az anu tzoakim sheva pamim, Hashem hu Elokim. We cry out during Ne'ilah, Hashem hu Elokim. We cry out 7 times. What are we doing when we are crying out, he says. Zohi tzaka el HaKadosh Baruch Hu kasher hu olel sheva harakim, al tazovo sanu, says Rav Pinkus. He says, this is like a cry from our depths of our soul, saying, Hashem, don't leave us. As we cry out, Hashem hu Elokim, don't leave us, don't leave us. We know that intense feeling that we have when we are finishing Ne'ilah. It's an unbelievable feeling that we have. We feel so connected. We feel like we're on a high. And then he says, then all of a sudden we daven Ma'ariv, and he goes on and he says, we're waiting to break our fast. And it seems, the last line in that paragraph, Hakol chozer l'kad muso, it seems like everything went back to normal. Everything went back to the way it was. What happened to that inspiration? And this is where he says so beautifully, the next paragraph, Be'etzem ein ze nachon, this isn't right. Rak nidmelenu shakol chozer l'kad muso, it only seems that we all went back to what it was. Masha be'etzem korei hu sheha'aba, avinu shebashamayim, ki'ilu omer, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, our Father is telling us, our Abba is telling us, hechzakti yosach maspik ala ofanayim, I've held you enough on that bike, on that two-wheeler. This is the image of a father teaching a child how to ride a bike. He's holding on to that bike. I'm holding on to you, but I've held on to you enough. Achshav nireh oscha rochev levad, let me see you ride on your own. You can do it. And after that, that's when we begin the year, the routine of our year, which Baruch Hashem has many opportunities for growth, but it's a routine. It's something that we're familiar with. That's when the real test begins. In fact, Cheshvan represents, according to Rav Hirsch, the ordinary, and represents the ordinary, and Tishrei represents the idea of being inspired. And the question is, can we take that inspiration and bring it to a real application? So Rav Shimshon Pinkas says, it's like HaKadosh Baruch Hu is riding on that, right, holding onto that bike with us in Chodesh Tishrei, and giving us all those landmarks and goalposts, and saying, I'm with you, but now it's time for you to go on your own, and I want you to feel that connection that you had with me in Tishrei. I want you to bring it over with you into Cheshvan and the rest of the year, into practical application. So to speak about Cheshvan, some of the strengths of Cheshvan, they're not readily apparent, as we, I'm sure, are aware. It is typically called Mar Cheshvan because Mar, meaning that we don't have the Chagim, it's empty, it's devoid of the Moadim. So before we speak about that, I first want to call your attention to the fact that some of you are probably aware that the names of the months that we have today, Nisan, Iyar, Sivan, Tammuz, are not of Hebrew origin. They're not Hebrew. In fact, is anybody aware of that? Most of you are aware of that? Yeah. Okay. Fine. Good. I want to show you the source for that. So they are actually of Babylonian sources. Okay. It comes from the Babylonian language. If you look at the Ramban, source number 2, he brings the Yerushalmi that tells us that this is a foundational Ramban. He says in source number 2, Kvar hizkiru rabbeinu zeh ha'inyan ve'amru shmos hachadashim alu imanu mibavel. The names of the months came up with us from Bavel. And then he goes on to say that in the beginning, obviously we refer to these names the way the Torah refers to the names, which is Chodesh Rishon, Chodesh Sheni, etc. Because ki mitzchila hayunu minyanam zecher liyetzias Mitzrayim. The reason the Torah refers to it as the first month, the second month, the third month, is because it is associated with our exodus from Egypt. So the first month from is referring to the Nisans, the month that we left Mitzrayim. The second month is the second month from the month that we left Mitzrayim v'chule. Similar to how we refer to the days of the week. Hayom Yom Rishon L'Shabbos, right? We make that association of the days of the week relative to Shabbos. But then he said, and then he says further, that the names of Nisan, of these names, the Bavli names that we call it today, we only see a reference to that in the Sfarim that were written after Golus Bavel or during Golus Bavel, such as Zechariah, or the way out of Golus Bavel, Zechariah, Ezra, Nehemiah, and Megillas Esther. We see clearly Chodesh Adar in Megillas Esther. And therefore, so what's the purpose of keeping the names, the Bavli names? He says, the last line, the middle of the last line, V'hinin azkir b'chadashim ha-gu'ula ha-sheiniz kasher asinu ad hinei v'arishona. what Ramban is saying is that the reason that we keep the Babylonian names is that we do not want to forget our history. To repeat, he says, Lahazkir kisham amadnu Hashem Yisbarach. Hashem took us out of that gulus, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu will amir to Hashem return us after our last gulus. We don't want to forget our history. And even though we did not experience open miracles when the Jews returned from Babel, think about it, Koresh allowed us to return, the geopolitical climate changed, economic climate change, whatever natural things happen in our world occurred so that Klal Yisrael were able to gradually return back to Eretz Yisrael and build a second Beis HaMikdash. But we still need to acknowledge the Nisim Nistarim inherent in our return, and in so doing, we strengthen our Emunah that a final Geula will come as well, and that is why we refer to the names, to the Bavli names, Nisan, Iyar, Sivan, Tammuz. So now let's talk about Cheshvan. Cheshvan. So as we said, the popular opinion, the popular view, is that the name is Mar Cheshvan, Mar space Cheshvan, and the Lashon of Mar is associated with Cheshvan because the month is devoid of Moedim, and we will get to that shortly. But it should be known that the name Mar Cheshvan seems to be the authentic name without the space, Mar Cheshvan, no space between Mar and Cheshvan. And this is evidenced by a halachic discussion of when writing a get, the month is written, if there's a question, there's a halacha question of whether or not if you write a get, chas v'shalom, in the month of Cheshvan, and the date is written as Cheshvan, or Mar, space, Cheshvan, whether or not the get is valid or not, whether or not the document is valid. And from what I understand, it seems to be valid because that's what we colloquially refer to this month. But the question is there because the authentic name seems to be Mar Cheshvan, the entire word, one word. So that's just a very interesting idea. Mar Cheshvan in the Babylonian language means eighth. Mar Cheshvan apparently means eighth month, which is why we refer to this month as Mar Cheshvan, because it's the eighth month. Additionally, the month of Cheshvan is referred to in Tanakh as Chodesh Bul. And if we look in the sources, we will see that there here, the month is referred to as Bul. And here we will see an event that occurred in Chodesh Cheshvan. In fact, I actually want to turn your attention to something else that happened before that, because I want to go chronologically. One thing, the first thing that happened in Cheshvan that we know of from the Torah is this week's Parsha, Parshas Noach. In source number 4, Bishnah Shneish, Shesh Me'osh Shana L'chaye Noach B'chodesh HaSheni B'Sheva Asar Yom L'chodesh, in the 8th month, on the 17th day of the 8th month, B'yom HaZed Nivku'u Kol Ma'inos Tahom Rabbah V'arubos HaShamayim Niftachu. So the flood, the Mabul, began in Cheshvan. So now we move to source number 5, which tells us that another name for Cheshvan is Bul. And we see this in Sefer Melach in Perek Aleph, Pasuk Lamed Ches, when we hear about the completion of the Beis HaMikdash that Shlomo built. Shlomo finished the Beis HaMikdash in the month of Cheshvan, so it doesn't seem to be such an empty month after all. Bashana Chasasrei B'yerach Bul Hu HaChodesh HaShmini Shanim. Shlomo HaMelech began the process of building the Beis HaMikdash, and he finished it in Chodesh Bul, which is the 8th month of Cheshvan. Why is it called Chodesh Bul? Says Rashi in the next line. Hu Mar Cheshvan, Yerach Bul. Hu Mar Cheshvan. Notice how Rashi keeps Mar Cheshvan as one word. That's what we were saying, Mar Cheshvan. Sha'esav bila basadeh ubalin labehema min habayis milashon vayavel lachamorim. Why is it called Bul? Because all of the grass dried up in the fields, and now the animals have to be fed from the grass that is dried up indoors, in barns or in silos. The Radak says, why is it called Bul? Hu Mar Cheshvan? Again, he's keeping the Mar Cheshvan together. Kamo shamar hu achodesh hashmini v'nikra kein mipnei hagishamim shematchilin bo. It's called Chodesh Bul from the Lashon of Mabul, because that's when the rainy season begins. So, we have an event that occurred here, and that is that the Beis HaMikdash was completed in Chodesh Cheshvan. However, the Medrash tells us that since the Beis HaMikdash was completed in Cheshvan, Shlomo wanted to do the Chanukas HaBayis in Chodesh Cheshvan. But Shlomo heard through Ruach HaKodesh that he indeed could not, and he had to wait to do the Chanukah Sabayis in the following Tishrei. So from Chodesh Cheshvan, the Beis HaMikdash was built, but it stood silent. It was silent and empty until Chodesh Tishrei. Additionally, it seems the Chazal tell us in source number 6, this is also from V'chein Yishayahu Amar, Ki Mei Noach Zos Li, this is from this week's Haftorah. I love when things coincide. Asher Nishbati Mavor Mei Noach Od Al Ha'aretz. Even though HaKadosh Baruch Hu promised that he would not bring another Mabul on the land, but what happened? But Atah Motzei Afal Pikein Arba'im Yom B'chol Shana HaYoasin Osan Hamayim Roshem Ba'olam. For 40 days from Cheshvan, apparently it would rain very, very heavy rain so that people would recall the Mabul. However, what happened? Shlomo built the Beis HaMikdash, and from the time he's built the Beis HaMikdash, the rains stopped. And that's what the name Bul is referencing, says this Medrash, because it is Bul without the Mem. Mabul minus the Mem for 40 days that it did not rain anymore equals Bul. So a very interesting idea relating to Cheshvan and the Beis HaMikdash and the Mabul. Now, another event that occurred in this month is that unfortunately the Jewish kingdom was split when Yeravam broke away from Amleches Yehuda. And so tragic was this breakup that Yeravam ben Nevat created literally a new holiday that resembled Sukkot. And when did he do this holiday? In the month of Cheshvan, a completely new yontif for the purpose of preventing the people from going down to the Beis HaMikdash so that they would not want to leave his kingdom. And in source number 7, it will tell you, Vayas Yeravam Chag b'chodesh hashmini b'chamisha asar yom l'chodesh kechag asher b'Yehuda. Yeravam made his own holiday on the 15th of the month, very similar to what the rest of the Jewish people were doing on the 15th day of the month of Chodesh Tishrei. He created his own holiday. So Yeravam, unfortunately, ripped apart Mamleches Beis David, created his own holiday in Cheshvan. Additionally, we also, if we live in Eretz Yisrael, those that live in Eretz Yisrael, on the 8th of Cheshvan is when they begin saying the same Tal Umatar Levracha. Additionally, a very, very big event that happened is the death of Rachel Imenu. Rachel Imenu dies in childbirth. So we have the death of Rachel Imenu. We have the fact that the Beis HaMikdash was completed but remained empty in Cheshvan. The Mabul began in Cheshvan and Mamleches Yehuda was split apart and Yeravam made his own holiday in Cheshvan. How does all of this help keep the inspiration of Tishrei alive? I did say that we were going to do that, did we not? So let's take a look at a few of these occurrences and try to do some digging. The development and the idea of Mar Cheshvan, separate, Mar, stop, Cheshvan, as referring to bitter, came about because of the events that transpired during the Chodesh Cheshvan, some of which we discussed. In addition to the fact that there are no Chagim, there's no Yontif in Cheshvan, where we were so full of connection in Tishrei, now we have quote-unquote nothing. But what our avoda seems to be is when looking at Cheshvan is to look at the Mar Cheshvan, at the bitterness of Cheshvan, the Mar, and transpose the letters and make them into Ram. Elevate Cheshvan into something different so that we can bring the inspiration into the month. So let's look at this from a deeper perspective. First, let's look at the Mabul for a few moments, if we can. The Mabul, the purpose of the Mabul was to cleanse the world. It was like a huge mikveh, as it were. It was to push the restart button and begin a clean and new slate. The Mabul reset literally the course of history. The reason the people of Noah's time were deserving of the flood was because the Torah tells us, Ki Rabba Ra'as ha'adam, because the people were excessively bad. They were so bad. Rabba ra'as ha'adam. And midah k'neged midah, they were punished with tehom rabba. HaKadosh Baruch Hu sent a flood. HaKadosh Baruch Hu sent a flood. Nivku'u kol mayanos tehom rabba. The same lashon is used, tehom rabba. relative to ki rabba ras ha'adam, and says Rashi, this is mida kenegan mida, because they were so involved in an excessive way in this evil, HaKadosh Baruch Hu sent to home rabba, the waters that came from that was so deep, it was excessive amount of rain. But later on, Rashi comments that they were deserving of destruction of the world, lo nechtam gzar din ela gezel, that they were deserving because of gezel, because of robbery, in addition to immorality and just complete destruction of the moral fiber. So I saw an idea by Rabbi Ozer Alpert, who brings down the Toldos Yitzchak. He says the idea is that the question is, is it because of rabba excessive, or is it because of that they were excessively evil? In what way? And in one place it says, Rashi says, it's because they stole. So which one is it? And he explains that one is the disease and one is the symptom. He says the symptoms of the moral decay of the people, the symptom was that they were dishonest and they had no regard for other people, for other people in their vicinity. The root cause of their lack of regard was rabba, excessiveness. They wanted more and more and more and more. The reason they were so corrupt was because they could not control their desires, because nothing was enough for them. This is very similar to who? To Esav, who said, Yeshli Rav, I have a lot, but I want more and more and more. And because of that, they couldn't act with moderation. And they wanted what was not theirs, and therefore they wanted other people's possessions, other people's wives. They wanted to engage in illicit relationships that was not due them. They wanted everything because they had this mentality of rabba, I want it, and I want it, and I want more, and more, and more. And as a result, mida kenegan mida, the waters came crashing down and flooded and destroyed the world. The very same waters that have life-giving and nurturing properties when experienced in appropriate amounts and in moderation. But when the rain is excessive, it becomes destructive. Because they wanted rabba, they were punished with tahom rabba, with an excessive amount of water, and everything was destroyed. I can't help but think about Yontif when I think about the excessiveness. I can't tell you how many times we were trying to make desserts and trying to cook this, and my girls were in the kitchen, and let me go out to the store and get this, and I want to get macadamia nuts, and I want to make this dessert and that dessert. You know, the amount, you know, you just flip through the magazines and you just see, you know, I have to have this, and we deserve it, and I must have it, and we have to get more and more. I don't know about Baltimore, but probably a lot less so in Baltimore, but there, it's just the amount of food that one can get, the amount of the variety. I mean, you know, our grandmothers would probably just, oh my gosh, how is this possible? And we want more, and we have to make this, and we got to make that. At some point, I said to my kids, like, okay, you know, we just have to make do with what we have. This is, it's getting obscene already. It was getting ridiculous. Baruch Hashem, we had a lot of people to feed, a lot of yontif, but you get the idea. So this idea of rabba, they wanted more and more and more and more. But that destruction, the destruction that HaKadosh Baruch Hu brought, literally brought about a new world order. It was the opportunity to rebuild and replant once again. When Noah got out of the Teva, it was like Bereishis Bara Elokim. It was a new world. It was a new world for him. HaKadosh Baruch Hu set the reset button, and everything began from anew. The waters were really a mikvah, purified the world so that a new opportunity arose. Now let's shift gears for a moment. So that's how we take the mar out and elevate it, because we look at the mabul as a rehabilitation, as the restart, as ability to restart the world. Now let's look at Rachel Imenu for a few moments. Her whole story is very difficult. We know that she's supposed to marry Yaakov. She gives over her signs to Leah. When she does so, she doesn't even know that she will have the opportunity to marry Yaakov. For all she knows, she just lost her opportunity. When she finally does get married, she's barren. And she watches on as her sister, Leah, gives birth one after the other to the Shvatim. And when she has her second child, she dies in childbirth. She is not even buried with Yaakov. So let's focus for a few moments on a number of issues. Rachel is known for her silence. Bischar, Zal tell us, Bischar tznios shehayasaba barachel zachsav yatsam mimenu sha'ul. Because of the in the merit of her tznius, meaning modesty, and it means their silence, She was able to bring forth Shaul, known for her silence and her modesty in not alerting Yaakov of the switch. And on the other hand, she uses her speech by handing over the simanim to her sister. To add more selflessness to this act, I want to call your attention to a number of things that Rav Shalom Shvadron brings down in his Sefer Lev Shalom. And he points our attention at a very emotionally charged conversation between Rachel and Leah. Now, we have to recall when discussing this, of course, that these are the two imahos that brought about the shifteka. Their conversations are recorded so that we can extract lessons, but we have to tread carefully when looking at these conversations through our mundane lens. And we have to understand that everything that they spoke about was, you know, everything said had such profound meaning and impact on the rest, on the future of Klal Yisrael. So Rav Shalom Shvadron, he points out, he says, when Rachel and Leah interact, when it comes to Rachel wanting the dudaim, the flowers that Reuven picked for Leah. Let's look at source number 8. So what he says is, so we're talking about Rachel Imenu, who died in Cheshvan. Rachel Imenu, this is her story. Vayelech Reuven bimei ktzir chitim vayimtza dudaim basadeh vayaveh osam aleya imo. So Reuven goes and he picks flowers, and Chazal say that they had special fertility qualities, and he gave them to his mother. Vatomer Rachel Aleya, Tanina li midudae b'ni, please give me those flowers. And what does Leah respond? Leah responds, Vatomer la, and she said to her, Hama'akach teich es ishi, v'lakachas gam es dudae b'ni? Is it enough that you took, or is it a small matter that you're going to take my husband, and now you also want to take my flowers? According to Rashi and others, under the Mefarshim, Rachel's tent was the main residence of Yaakov Avinu. And Leah was referring to the fact that, isn't it enough that Yaakov spends most of his time with you, and now you want to take my dudaim? Vatomer Rachel, lachin yishkav imach halayla tachas dudae b'neich. Therefore, you know what? You may have a point. I'm going to trade my time with Yaakov, and you take my time with Yaakov in exchange for those dudaim. Incidentally, she was held accountable for playing around with her time with Yaakov, but that's a different story. So what Leah is saying is that you want to take my flowers? Isn't it enough that Yaakov's main residence, according to Mefarshim, was in Rachel's tent, and Leah is saying, you already spend so much time with Yaakov, now you're the mainstay of the household, and now you want my flowers? What is so startling about this question, asks Rav Shalom Shvadron. Leah has a taina that Rachel is the Akeres Habayis, Akeres from Ikar, the Akeres Habayis. She seems to be secondary. Then we can respond and say, excuse me? What? Didn't Rachel give up the potential to get married to Yaakov for the sake of her sister Leah? Didn't Rachel sacrifice her place in Beis Yaakov for the honor of her sister by giving over the simanim that were agreed upon by Yaakov and Rachel? Possibly have say such a statement. Did Leah forget what her sister did for her? How could Leah say, Hama'akach teich ishi? The only reason Leah is married to Yaakov is because of Rachel's Mesiras Nefesh. So what is she saying? So says Rav Shalom Shvadron, he says, we are making assumptions here, he says. He says, who says that Leah even knew of the Mesiras Nefesh that Rachel did for her? He turns the entire story on its heels. He says, who said that Leah even knew? We always assume that Rachel gave the signs to Leah and they agreed upon it. He said, this is the signs, the hand signs. But Rav Shalom Shvadron says, he says, when Rachel shared those signs, the simanim, with Leah, she did it in such a way so that Leah had absolutely no idea that Rachel was even doing her a favor. Because according to the Das Zakenim, the simanim were not just signals or a hand code that they were going to do with each other. They were halachos pertaining to particularly Jewish women, Nida, Chala, and Neros. And the plan was for Yaakov to discuss these halachos and ask questions about it. And Rachel would answer, and then he would know that it was indeed Rachel under the chuppah. Therefore, in order to prevent the humiliation of Leah, Rachel simply told her these halachos, taught her these halachos, that she should know as a woman entering the home of Yaakov. And when she did so, she did not reveal to Leah that this was an agreed upon code. She didn't tell her that she was supposed to be Yaakov's first wife. Leah had no idea. In fact, there's a Midrash that says that Yaakov would send gifts to Rachel, and Lavan would intercept those gifts and bring them to Leah, and Rachel never said a word. She did this chesed for Leah, preserving her dignity without Leah even realizing what she was doing, that she was doing the ultimate sacrifice. And this answers the question, says Rav Shlomo Shvadron, of why Rachel is known for shtika. Because after all, true, she was at Tzanua. But how do we see the midah of modesty from this particular episode, he says? So she gave over the simanim. And he says it answers the question of the famous medrash that we all know, where the Avos came to HaKadosh Baruch Hu when Klal Yisrael being exiled. Avraham, Yitzchak, Yaakov, Moshe, they all came and complained to HaKadosh Baruch Hu and said, "It is a chus of what I did, it is a chus of what I did. Have rachmanis on your children." And Rav Shlomo Shvadron asks, he says, why is it that HaKadosh Baruch Hu listened to Rachel? Why her taina? And let's look at source number 9 and 10. Let's look at number 10 in Eicha Rabbah, a very famous medrash. I'm sure you all know this, but let's look at it again. Rachel jumped before HaKadosh Baruch Hu and said, as Klal Yisrael were being led into Golus, Rachel Imenu, the ultimate advocate for Klal Yisrael, v'amra ribono shel olam galoy lefanecha sheYaakov avdecha v'ani ava yisera, you know that Yaakov loved me, this extra love. V'avad b'shvili la'aba sheva shanim, k'sheshlimo son sheva shanim v'igiz man nisuei leba'ali atz avi lahachlifeini leba'ali. I'm reading quickly because I want to make sure that we cover it. That you know that at the last moment, Lavan switched the plan, and you know that Leah was switched instead of me. And you know, ya'atz avi lahachlifeini leba'ali b'shvil achosi v'huksha alai hadavar ad ma'od. It was so difficult for me, says Rachel. What a beautiful medrash. U'masarti la'achosi kol ha'simonim shemasarti leba'ali. And I gave everything over to Leah. V'gamalti chesed ima v'lo kanas v'lo kinesi ba v'lo hotosi l'cherpa. I did everything to preserve her dignity. And if that's the case, why are you jealous of Avodah Zara? And because of the Avodah Zara, of the rival, I brought a rival into the house. You know that the second wife in a home is called a tzara, a rival, right? So Rachel Imenu is saying, I brought a tzara into my home. I didn't even know if I was going to be able to marry Yaakov, and I wasn't jealous. I did it. So why, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, are you jealous, so to speak, of the Avodah Zara, and you're exiling Klal Yisrael because of it? And look at the second to the last line. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, the third to the last line, Miyad nisgalgalu rachamav shel HaKadosh Baruch Hu. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is full of rachamim. Va'amar bishvilech Rachel ani machzir es Yisrael limkoman. Because of your taina, I'm going to return Klal Yisrael to their place. Ahaduch siv, komar Hashem kol baraman ishma nehi b'chi tamarim Rachel mevaka al baneha me'ana lehinachem al baneha. And this is why it says in source number 9, is from Yirmiyahu, one of the most famous psukim in all of Tanakh. This is what Hashem says: I hear Rachel imenu's cry kol baraman ishma mini kolech mibechi ve'enayich midima ki yesh sachar lefula seich na'um Hashem. Stop crying, because your actions have so much weight, they have swayed me. And I promise you, v'shavu me'eretz oyev, your children will return. But asks Rav Shalom Shvadron, what does Rachel's taina have over the others, he asks. Why is the midah of tznias associated with this act? And says Rav Shalom Shvadron, he says, because not only did she not let Leah know what she was doing by teaching her this sign, but what happened? She kept this secret her entire life. Her entire life. She never, ever, Rachel's act was not a one-time sacrifice. Rachel's greatness was her ongoing modesty, her ongoing silence, and her refusing to divulge this incredible act of self-sacrifice. And consider her silence, says Rav Shlomo Shvadron, when we refer back to the Dudaim episode. Hama'at kach teich es ishi. So not only did she not say, do you not remember what I did? We said she can't say that because she didn't reveal it. But what she did not say is, if you only knew what I did for you. You know, in the heat of the moment, Leah is responding, and we're talking about a very emotionally charged conversation, and Rachel has this incredible superhuman restraint to not let her know of the chasadim that she has been doing for her on an ongoing basis. She is silent, and she keeps up the charade and protects her honor to the extent that she's even bartering, and she's saying, you know, you have a point there. So if that's the case, let's barter. Let's trade my time with Yaakov and let me have the Duda'im. That's how great Rachel Imenu was. Rachel Imenu was inspired at the point where she wanted to help her sister, Bish'as Maisa, as they say. But she kept that inspiration going. She kept it going. She never divulged her secret, even in the face of an emotionally charged interaction. That's her greatness. The Nesiva Shalom brings down in Parshas Chayisara, I just realized, that when we say the Haser Satan milfaneinu umeacharenu, HaKadosh Baruch Hu should remove a Satan from behind us and in front of us. What does that mean? It means from in front of us when we are about to do a mitzvah or we don't want to do an Aveira, that we Hashem should remove the Satan. We don't have the Yetzirah to do an Aveira, or we don't have the Yetzirah to refrain from doing a mitzvah. But what does it mean, meacharenu, from behind us, says the Nesiva Shalom? It means we don't want the Yetzirah to nag at us and nag at us and make us feel resentful for having done a mitzvah. That's the Yetzahara Meacharenu. I can't believe I did. I can't believe I took that person home because it totally messed up my day. I can't believe I gave so much tzedakah. I can't believe I gave much some of my time. She's completely not thankful for it. Completely ungrateful. What a stress I had to do this chesed. What a stress I had to do this in this mitzvah, etc. You get the point. So Rachel Imenu, not only does she not tell her Bishas Maisa, not only does she keep up the charade her entire life, she literally takes it to the grave with her, but she has no regrets. She only uses it for the sake of Klal Yisrael, says Rosh Hashanah Shvadron. Rachel takes the secret to her grave, a kaver that is not with her husband Yaakov, a kaver that is on the way, on the road, where she will pray for all of Klal Yisrael as they are exiled. She is barren for so many years, and she is the biological mother of only two Shvatim, yet she is the quintessential mother of all of Klal Yisrael. There's an irony, another irony as well. Leah is the second choice of Yaakov, and she is buried with Yaakov. Rachel Imenu is childless. For so many years, she is the first choice of Yaakov, and she is not buried with Yaakov. Look at the pasuk again in source number 9. Kol barama nishma. Kol barama nishma, nehi b'chi tamrurim. The bitter cries, b'chi tamrurim, the bitter cries of Rachel on behalf of her children, of all of Klal Yisrael, where are they heard? They are heard on Ramah. The mar is transformed, the bitter crying is transformed, and they elevate because she refuses, me'ana lehi nachem, she refuses to be consoled on her children. The Bechi Tamrurim, look at the words, look at the letters, turn into, they are heard on Ramah. Rachel Imenu is Nifteres in Cheshvan, but her death brings strength and support for all of Klal Yisrael as they are in exile. Cheshvan is that Mar, is that time where we have to elevate it. Cheshvan is where we are whispering. Merachash in Sefaseh, our lips are still whispering because we want to maintain the inspiration. Rachel keeps the inspiration going. I just heard a story by Rabbi Frand about a kala in Eretz Yisrael who on her wedding day, a day where most girls are completely self-centered, maybe some of you have heard the story, in Eretz Yisrael, she came to a pediatric oncology ward to give the pediatric patients brachos on her wedding day. Why? Because she realizes the koach that a kala has, and she wanted to give brachos to these sick children. This is selflessness. I think about selflessness, and I think about my dear sister-in-law, Alea HaShalom, Shifra Yehudis, Bas HaRav Nassan El Yosef, Mrs. Shifra Orlean, who is Nefteris this year, who was taken too early from us. And there was an account that happened with her. She was an unbelievable, unbelievable person. And I know this is true because it happened to a neighbor of mine. An unbelievable story. Just, quote unquote, a regular person. But we see the strength that some people have. Seems that my neighbor needed help with carpool, and she asked my sister-in-law, Aleha Shalom Shifra, she should be an aliyah for her neshama, for if she can pick up her daughter from preschool. And this neighbor of mine thought that Shifra had, my niece was in preschool at the time, the same division. YSV is a very, very big school. It takes a long time to do carpool in the afternoon for preschool. So she asked her, and she said, sure, I can pick her up because she worked late and she couldn't get there. And she asked her again if she could do it. And she said, sure, no problem. I'll pick her up. And all the while, my neighbor thought that my niece, this Shifra's daughter, was in the same preschool division. Only after a few months, it ended up that my sister-in-law offered to let me just pick her up. I see that you're having trouble finding carpool and you're working late. It's not a problem. I'll take her home. Only after a few months did my neighbor realize that Shifra indeed had no children in that preschool division, and she was actually going out of her way, making it seem as if she was not going out of her way. And doing carpool means another 45 minutes of your day, probably half an hour, 45 minutes. She said she was blown away by this chesed, because not once did she divulge to her that she was going out of her way, and she pretended, she sort of made it like, you know, I'm going anyway. And she thought she meant she's going anyway because she's picking up her daughter. Meanwhile, her daughter was never there. She was blown away by this act of chesed of my sister-in-law. You know, we can think about stories of people that have done incredible levels of chasadim. I know a person very well who has taken care of a lot of people that are in unfortunate situations. And sometimes they get in situations where they're working behind the scenes and talking to therapists and talking to parents and talking to principals and talking to rabbanim and dealing with a lot of issues unbeknownst to the beneficiary of these chasadim. And one particular situation, this person that I know well, she not only did she not get a thank you, but she got verbally abused by this person that was the recipient of her chesed. And it was like constant. It was just so bad. And I said to this person, don't you want to tell her how much you've done for her? She doesn't even realize. How does she not, forget thanking, but why is she slapping you on the face for it? She said, what's the point? What's the point of me saying? So we have great people that are able to do things, chasadim, in a very anonymous way. We know the highest level of chesed is doing a chesed without the person even realizing it. But to do a chesed, again, getting slapped in the face for it, that's a completely different level. I don't know many people that would give up their chesins for somebody, but we're talking about Rachel Imenu, and she certainly gives us the koach. But then I was thinking that there's an incredible level of chesed that people do, but I think that we can think about this in terms of, we took the grandiose chasadim that people can do, but there's also chasadim that people do when it comes to relationships. Think about relationships of parents and children. Isn't there so much that we do for our children or that our parents have done for us behind the scenes, and we have absolutely no idea what they have done for us? Or our children have absolutely no idea what we have done for them. Don't we have the urge sometimes to say, if you would only know, right? We all have... I don't know, I sometimes have the urge. But then we think about our parents and what our parents have done for us. And this gives us a newfound appreciation for what our parents have done for us and all the behind-the-scenes activities and actions that they have done to make our lives better. And we have absolutely no idea. They did it in silence. They didn't expect anything in return. And then as we get older, I think sometimes... The tides change, where sometimes Emir Tashem we should live on Me'eva Esrim, and as we get older, we may have to be the recipient and the beneficiary of our children's chasadim. And when that happens, I am sure that we will not know everything that our children will Emir Tashem do for us. And I think it's just something that I thought that we could think about in terms of our relationships and try to be grateful for what most certainly goes on behind the scenes when we think of Rachel Imenu and her superhuman, mamish superhuman silence. So Rachel Imenu, we said, lived most of her, Rachel Imenu dies in Mar Cheshvan. According to most commentaries, there are different opinions, but most commentaries say she died in Cheshvan. And she lived most of her life out of Eretz Yisrael, except for that small moment when she gave birth. She finally enters the edge of Eretz Yisrael, and she is Nifteres in Cheshvan. And with her death, she brings into the world Binyamin, who is the only one of Yaakov's children who is born in Eretz Yisrael, in whose chelek will be the Kodesh Kedashim, was the Kodesh Kedashim of the Beis HaMikdash. In source number 13, why, skip to source number 13, why is it that Binyamin is zoche to have the Kodesh Kedashim in his chelek? Mahaya b'chal kosha Yehuda, har habayis halishkosos v'azaros, mahaya b'chal kosha binyan ulam v'heichlo beis kodesh kedashim. So why is it that he has the Kodesh Kedashim? Why is it? Skip to the middle of the second line. Binyamin hatzadik. Hayom mitzta'er aleha lebil'a bechol yom shene'emar chofef alav kol hayom. Binyamin HaTzadik was known to cry. He was mitzta'er on having the Shechina in his portion. He was so connected to the Beis HaMikdash. So we have Rachel Imenu, who cries for her children, who gives birth to Binyamin, who is mitzta'er for the Beis HaMikdash, and therefore has the Kodesh Kedashim in his chelek. The account of Rachel Imenu dying is told over by Yaakov Avinu in his last days. He tells Yosef about Rachel Imenu's death, about his mother's death. And if you look in source number 11, Vayhi B'tseis, let's look at the account of her death. Vayhi B'tseis Nafsha, this is in Parshas Vayishlach, not yet in Vayhi. I'm sorry, let's go back to her death. It was when she was about to die. She's dying in childbirth. She realized she's dying. She called her son Ben Oni, the son of my affliction. But his father called him Binyamin, the son of my strength, or the son of my right hand. And the Ramban comments to the next post, if you skip down to the Ramban, V'hanochon be'enai ki imo kraso ben oni v'ratzta lomar ben evli aveli. His mother called him ben oni because it means the son of my pain, the son of my mourning. V'aviv asa min oni kochi. But Yaakov Avinu said, no, we're not going to call him ben oni. We're going to keep the integrity of the name, but we're going to refer to him as Binyamin, the son of my strength. And skip down to the last line, V'hinei tergem oso letova l'gvura. He took that Ben Oni, the son of my affliction, and he elevated it, and he made him into the son of my right hand, the son of my strength. This is Binyamin. Binyamin is the one who cried over the Beis HaMikdash. Only one that is a Ben Oni that can cry and be mitzta'er for the Shechina, be mitzta'er for Klal Yisrael, the son of Rachel Imenu, who is mitzta'er for all of Klal Yisrael, can transform and be a Binyamin, the son of strength. Rachel dies in childbirth, and Yaakov reminds Yosef about this, and where she is buried in source number 12. In Parshas Vayechi, he reminds Yosef, he says, Avani bevo mipadan mesa alai Rachel be'eretz kanan b'derech ba'od kivras eretz lavo efrasav ek barasham b'derech efrat hi beis lachem. He says, listen to the lashon, mesa alai Rachel. Rachel died on me. Listen to the pain. Rachel died on me and I had to bury her on the way. I couldn't even bring her fully into the land. And says Rashi, I didn't even in accompany her into the middle of Eretz Yisrael. But he says, I know that you have some tainus against me, Yosef. Yaakov says to Yosef, I know that you may have some tainus to me. Why did I bury her there? Why didn't I bury her in the Aras HaMachpelah? It seems like I didn't have respect for her. Aval dalacha sha'al pi adibor kvarti hasham shetehele ezra lebanek sheyigle osam nevuzradam. Know that I did this. I buried her there because I know that she's going to be a help for Klal Yisrael when Klal Yisrael are exiled and they're going to pass by and Rachel's going to come out of her caver and she's going to cry and request and cry to HaKadosh Baruch Hu for rachamim sheneemar kol b'rama nishma Rachel mevaka al baneha. Rachel does not stop crying. Binyamin does not stop crying. Recall that we spoke about Sheva Binyamin when we spoke about Mordechai and Esther, when we spoke about this in the Purim time. I don't know if you remember. We spoke about the idea that Mordechai and Esther represent Sheva Binyamin, who really were connected to the Beis HaMikdash. So here we see this connection right here. The death of Rachel Imenu, who is the opposite of Rabba Ra'as Ha'adam, the opposite of what the Dor HaMabul represented, where they wanted everything and nothing was enough. Rachel Imenu, who died in Cheshvan, wanted nothing for herself. She brings about the birth of Binyamin and his longing for the Beis HaMikdash and the Shekhinah. Recall that we said that in Cheshvan the Beis HaMikdash was completed and not dedicated in Cheshvan, but they had to wait till Tishrei. HaKadosh Baruch Hu tells Cheshvan in source number 14, don't worry, your time will come as well. Kaviyachal HaKadosh Baruch Hu speaking to Cheshvan. V'chein mar Cheshvan asid HaKadosh Baruch Hu l'shalem. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to pay back Cheshvan. How? By building the Beis HaMikdash in Cheshvan, by dedicating the Beis HaMikdash in Cheshvan. The third Beis HaMikdash will be the strongest, which will be everlasting, according to this Medrash, will be dedicated in Chodesh Cheshvan to make up for the dedication that was not done during the time of Shlomo HaMelech. The fracture of Mamleches Beis David that was caused by Yeravam creating a new Chag from his own mind, from his own creativity, in Chodesh Cheshvan, that fracture will be repaired. V'shavu banim ligvulam. During Noach's time, the Mabul came because of excessiveness that led to a complete hashchasa and a moral deterioration. But that Mabul brought about a new beginning. It brought about a renewal. Rachel Imenu, who died in Cheshvan, is the opposite of Rabba, wanted nothing for herself. She is silent about her chesed. She keeps her inspiration her entire life. She is silent, but her cries are heard by HaKadosh Baruch Hu and sustain Klal Yisrael in Golos with the hope of Geula. The Beis HaMikdash stood silent in Cheshvan, but we still see the dedication. We will see the dedication of the third Beis HaMikdash with the Kodesh Kedushin in the Nachla of Binyamin in Chodesh Cheshvan. Cheshvan, recall, according to Rav Hirsch, is the idea of silence. But according to the Medrash, in Cheshvan, the fracture of Mamleches Beis David will be repaired. That silence will be replaced with joyous singing. In Cheshvan, there is silence. A silence descends on our families as we return to the beautiful routine of our Jewish way of life, with opportunities at every waking moment to connect to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. We hope that when the gentle rains will come, they will bring sustenance and nourishment to the seeds of inspiration that we planted in Tishrei, and that we take that mar from Mar Cheshvan and elevate it to Ram through the Merach Shin Tzfaseh, whispering, the whispering of our lips. May the sounds of silence of Cheshvan be heard as our hearts and souls recall the tefillos and the mitzvos of Tishrei. May we be able to maintain that inspiration as Rachel did. May we learn from the rejuvenation of the Mabul, the restraint of Rachel, so that we will be zocha to see the dedication of the third Beis HaMikdash in Cheshvan, where that silence will be broken by the sounds of rejoicing. Od yishama ba'arei Yehuda u'b'chutzos Yerushalayim kol sason v'kol simcha. Wishing everybody a beautiful, elevated, and sweet Cheshvan. And may all of these mitzvot stay with us and all of the inspiration stay with us throughout the rest of the year.